The economy is struggling, and everyone, it seems, is looking for ways to cut costs. In some cases, saving money can also lead to saving the planet. We're going to look at two sustainable practices that help buffer the economic downturn. We'll hear how planting vegetable seeds can lower your grocery bill. First, we look at the manufacturing industry. Oil, natural gas, and coal used to make products is one of the biggest expenses. A Chicago entrepreneur thinks he has a way for factories and refineries to reduce those costs and pollution by recycling the energy they already burn. NPR's David Shaper reports.
Ever notice the nuclear power plant in The Simpsons? You know, the one Homer Simpson works at? Tom Kasten does. He's chairman of suburban Chicago-based Recycled Energy Development. And when looking at a picture of the cartoon power plant on his desk, he zeroes in on something.
Giant amounts of steam coming out of the cooling towers, basically reflecting that 2 out of every 3 units of energy are being thrown into the air as waste heat.
That's right. Kasten says for every 3 units of fuel, like oil, gas, or coal that's burned to make electricity, 2 are wasted. The heat just escapes into the air. As Homer Simpson would say,
"Don't!"
Kasten sees heat being wasted everywhere, not just in cartoon power plants, but at real ones, as well as at steel mills, factories, and refineries.
When you've learned what I've learned and you carry my concern for global warming, you see those stacks of steam as immoral and very dangerous.
For the last 30 years, Tom Kasten has been working to develop profitable ways to capture waste heat and turn it into power.
There are many industrial processes that emit high-temperature exhaust. The energy coming out is a very high temperature. You can use that high temperature energy to boil water, make steam, and drive an electric generator.
And that's what's happening here at the giant ArcelorMittal steel mill in East Chicago, Indiana.
This is a platform that's about 200 feet in the air.
Standing high above the sprawling steel mill on an open graded platform, John Prunkel, president of Primary Energy Recycling Corporation, points to a battery of coke ovens below, at least a quarter of a mile long.
There's a lot of heat down there. Coke is coal that's burned in an oxygen-deprived environment. And when you do that, you create and release a tremendous amount of heat, very hot, probably 2,500 degrees.
And this excess heat used to just drift away. But 10 years ago, Primary Energy contracted with the mill's owners to install boilers above the coke ovens to use the wasted heat to generate steam and electricity.
We could produce almost 100 megawatts of electrical generation out of the steam that's produced off of the waste heat that we're capturing here today.
That's enough electricity to power more than 60,000 homes. Recent EPA and Department of Energy studies suggest U.S. industries waste enough heat to generate an estimated 200,000 megawatts of power. That's nearly 20% of what this nation uses, enough electricity to replace up to 400 coal-fired power plants. And it's not just excess heat that can be recycled. In another part of the steel mill, waste gas from the blast furnace is captured and reused. It's a gas that is usually just burned off by a flare at the top of a stack. But when mixed with oxygen, it can be used just like natural gas. All totaled, energy recycling creates close to 250 megawatts of power at the steel mill. That's about half of the electricity it uses each day, saving tens of millions of dollars a year in energy costs and greatly reducing CO2 emissions. This type of energy recycling is commonplace in Northern Europe and Japan. Denmark generates more than half of its electricity this way. So why isn't it done more often here?
The real challenge is that it's typically illegal, and they've got to find a way to get around the laws.
Tom Kasten says state and federal laws protect monopoly utilities, often preventing energy recyclers from selling excess power back to the grid or running power lines across a street. Even the Clean Air Act prevents utilities themselves from recycling waste heat at older coal-fired power plants, because any modification subjects them to newer regulations. But with soaring energy costs and an increasing push for green power, Kasten and others hope recycling energy can start to get as much attention as solar panels and wind power. David Shaper, NPR News, Chicago.
Listeners of this program know me as a radio host, but I actually wear a lot of hats. I'm a chauffeur, a nurse, a homework tutor, a fixer of anything that happens to break, a chief cook, and a bottle washer, too.
I can wash out 44 pairs of socks and have them hanging out on the line. I can start an iron 2 dozen shirts before you can count from 1 to 9. I can scoop up a great big dipper full of lard from the drippings can.
Throw up the skillet, go out and do my shopping. Be back before it melts in the pan. Cause I'm a woman.
I am a busy woman, but like many of you, I find relaxation in the garden. I'm more of a tinkerer than an expert, so I get help from Lisa Capriolio. She's a professional gardener in the Washington, D.C. area, and she's sort of like my gardening coach. This summer, we're checking in with her from time to time. In our last chat, Lisa Capriolio helped me. Actually, she implored me to remove a profusion of purple loosestrife. It was a beautiful but invasive plant that can wreak havoc on the environment. I had to get rid of it, leaving a big hole in my garden.
I'm trying not to get wistful about that because I liked the view, but as I...
Well, we're not going to leave it empty and lonely. We will come up with something that is beautiful and... inviting for you and perhaps even for the wildlife.
She wanted me to complete the circle, to replace the invasive with an indigenous plant.
If we want to go native,
yes,
in this space, you have a couple of ideas.
Yes, I do. I actually even brought a sample for you.
Okay, well, let's take a look.
Okay. There is another plant that is regionally native that's liatris.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and right now, this early in the spring, it's just a little thing. It almost even looks grassy. The leaves are long and skinny. But in time, it will grow in a similar shape to what you had with the purple loosestrife, and it will have similar type of blooms. There'll be long spikes of purple flowers.
So we get to work. Bye-bye, purple loosestrife. Hello, gay feather.
Native to Chesapeake Bay?
Mm-hmm. Deciduous perennial, so... All good. Full sun to part shade.
Now we want to do it generously. So you can use your trowel or you can scoop it up. Or you can...
Board on.
Ah! Yeah, this
is it difficult to find native plants if you just go to the local garden store?
You will find native plants at the larger specialty nurseries. And if they do a good job, they might even have them labeled for you to make it easier for you to track them down. But unfortunately, you're not likely to find them at the big box stores. So you can't just go swooping in on a Saturday while you're out doing other errands and pick up some native plants.
So it is best to do a little bit of research, figure out what's native to your region, and have a list when you go to the garden store?
But it is a little bit more challenging to go out and find natives, and I think that may be one of the reasons why people have not used them to the extent that they might, is that it's easier to just go get one of the top 10 familiar plants, grab it, go put it in the ground, and you've got a pretty garden. If you want to do natives, they're equally beautiful, and perhaps for the long term, they're better, but it's not as easy. And if you feel that it's all or nothing, in terms of if I don't rip out my entire garden of all the exotics and put in only natives, then I guess I might as well not do anything. You don't want the perfect to be the enemy of the good.
And Lisa says there's another reason for going native.
There's a homogenization of the way that the United States looks. When you drive around, the malls all look the same. You see the same few stores everywhere that you drive. And that is happening, too, with the plantings. You see the same few plants used over and over and over again. They're not necessarily invasive, but it's repetitive. And when you plant native plants that are regionally native, you have a sense of place, a sense of character. So if you're in Virginia, you've got your Virginia bluebells. It adds a unique quality that makes you feel like you're someplace.
Well, Lisa, thank you. Thanks for your help today.
It's always wonderful to be in the garden with you.
That's Lisa Capriolio of Alder Tree Gardens in the Washington, D.C. area. For our next chat, the subject is roses, and we want to hear from you. If you have questions about growing roses, send them in, and Lisa Capriolio will try to answer some of them. Go to our website, it's npr.org/contact, and please put roses in the subject of your email. You're listening to All Things Considered from NPR News.